Welcome to Soap, a story of the Tates and the Campbells, whose normal life is anything but normal, with co-hosts Tom Diamond, Vicky Ray, Jesse Fultz, and Keith Chalgo. Soap operas come and go, but there has never been a soap opera like Soap.
And welcome back to the Literary License Podcast. And today we are still doing our retrospective of Soap, Season 1, Episodes 17 to 25. And today it's just little old me and Keith Chalgo. Hello, Keith.
Hello, everyone. How are y'all doing?
And before we get started, we'd like to see what all two of us have been up to since the last time we spoke. Starting with Keith, what you been up to?
I haven't been up to a lot. I've been playing a lot of computer games. Well, one computer game, I'm playing Zombie Army 4, which is basically killing Nazi zombies, which is nothing more fun than killing zombies and killing Nazis. So yeah,
Nazi zombies are disturbing looking. If you watch any of the Shudder movies or any of that stuff with the Nazi zombies, for some reason, they are some of the most disturbing looking zombies ever. Maybe just because they're Nazis and zombies, but the makeup and the special effects with them are just freaking upsetting.
I know the Nazi soldiers did a horrible, horrible thing, but they were dressed very well. So you have well-dressed zombies. So it's even better.
They were. The SS was pretty sharp, was it not?
Yeah, who would have thought they'd be so fashionable? Being such high-end things. So.
I could see all the hate mail pouring.
And outside of that, I finished Them, which I really, really enjoyed. Really good series that's on Amazon Prime in this country, but I think it's HBO or Showtime in your country.
It's on HBO Max. I still haven't finished it because I had all this other stuff going on for the last 2 weeks. But I watched the first two episodes where I'm in with the colored family in the 50s. I still got to finish it. I liked it. I just haven't had a chance to revisit it after the last week or so.
It was excellent. I'm not going to give anything away, but the acting is probably so superb and so wonderful. And it just gets worse and worse and worse. And yeah, I was totally glued to it. It was just like, but it is one of those series that you kind of have to watch one or two, take a break. You can't just binge watch the whole thing because it's just too tense and your heart and body's just shaking and stuff like that. And outside of that, I've just been watching bits and pieces. I watched the Oscars and what a bunch of bollocks that was. And,
you're one of the 8.5 million people worldwide that watched the Oscars.
Well, I didn't watch it live. They did it on my recap show that was only like an hour in this country. I mean, they did show it live, but I was going to watch it live. I watched the recap so you get like the best bits.
It's far too preachy for me.
It was like a greatest hits album of one single band. You know what I mean? They had you know, the bands that have like only one single that's any good and the rest of their stuff's a shit. It was a bit like that. But it did make me very keen to see No Man's Land. Now it's on Disney Plus with Frances McDormand. She's always fantastic as well. And so I will be watching No Man's Land. So
is that a series or is that just a movie?
It's a movie that won Oscar for the best movie, and it won best actress, and it won best screenplay, and it won a bunch of Oscars. And it's basically about this woman. To be honest, when I first heard about it, I thought it was a documentary. I thought Frances McDormand took time off and made a documentary about caravan people. But no, it's a movie with her playing a caravan person where she loses everything and joins this and becomes part of this caravan nation where basically they travel from town to town. Because they have no homes due to the American dream dying on them. So I'm really keen to seeing that. So I'll probably watch that this weekend. It's Bank Holiday weekend here in the UK. So I'm looking forward to that. And taking some time off, I'll do a little bit more work tonight. And then after that, I have two, 3 days off. So yes, I'm looking forward to that. But besides that, that's it for me, really.
What about
yourself?
Not a whole lot. We're going to take a little hiatus from BMX for a while. Not for a while, but we got Asher's motorcycle in the garage because he wants to do a little MXing for a change. And my getting a new roof because the insurance finally took pity on me after that last blast of whatever happened to Texas in February. Armageddon, Snowmageddon, Covamageddon, Snowmageddon. You know, we had it all. I mean, if anything's going to shit on Texas, it would do that to us. But I'm kind of looking forward to not worrying about my roof being ripped off except by an F5. And that'll probably be next because I don't have that kind of luck. But just pretty much chilling and trying to get some painting done. We're really just trying to fix up the house lately. And I started watching part two of In Search of Darkness. I was really happy to see that come on Shudder. I was thinking about, I texted you and Joe, actually. I thought about it a lot. I thought about you too, because I'm halfway through it and it's just so good. I can't sing its praises enough. Anybody that's a fan of, you know, 80s horror, because that was like the slasherama decade, you know, for all of this stuff that you possibly will never get away with ever again. And it's just got all the greatest minds, directors, actors, actresses, you name it, are on here, and all the commentators and just, you know, Joe Bob and, you know, just everybody. You know, it's just an excellent series. It's 4.5 hours, the first one, and this one's another 4.5 hours, but it's pure gold.
I mean, I love the first one. I'm definitely going to watch the second one.
Oh, God, it's excellent. And I was going to.
Especially since it ties into our season five.
It really ties into our season five. And they've got like, is that Leanna Quigley on her? That she's got her own segment about all this stuff and how she did, what parts she did. And Joe was just going through my head the whole time. Because, you know, she is always in the shower when she gets killed. It's kind of funny, actually. And but it really does go hand in hand with what we're trying to do. And then I just happened to come across as well. Joe Bob is on his new season, and he had the audition on. I've never seen the audition, but you know, it's subtitled. But like I said, do not be shied away from subtitles, especially if it's like an Asian film, because no matter what, you know what's going on. And I mean, it was, the end was probably one of the most brutal movies I've seen.
Yeah, it is.
Like ever. I mean, the things you can do with piano wire, that's all I'm going to say. Jeez. I mean, oh my God. And then I revisited The Class of 1984. I hadn't seen that in a long time. You know, that was
that's an excellent film. I love that film.
Yeah, it's a really good film. I totally forgot all about it. You know, it's just been so long since I've seen it. But, and then I ended up watching both Hatchets, the Victor Crowley saga. You know, those are just excellent. I love Victor Crowley movies. I wish they'd make another one.
There's three of them.
Is there three? I didn't know that.
Yeah, the last one in the trilogy is called Aleister Crowley or Victor Crowley.
Victor Crowley. Man, I don't know. I probably have seen it. I've watched
it. Ties it all up.
Scott thinks I'm just a totally morbid, decrepit human being, because every time he comes into the back room, I've always got some kind of slice and dice movie on, you know, and I get really frustrated because I've seen so many of them, I can't find anything new. So when I started watching Search Darkness, I saw a whole bunch of little gems I haven't seen or I need to go back and see, you know. And they're making a big deal out of the second Freddy Krueger movie because of all the innuendo in that one, because the final girl is a final guy.
Yeah,
and it had a whole bunch of interesting retrospective on that, huh?
Doesn't Freddy come out of his body?
Yes, yeah, Freddy like kind of tears up, comes out of his chest and everything. It was really good. I mean, you know what? Back in the day, my head wasn't thinking like that.
I have to say, in the back of the day, I was gay and out at that time when it came out, and I just remember it's just like, you know, I didn't take it about like him fighting off. I mean, I know that film historians and people now look at Freddy, Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Return. And they kind of, now turn into about a man fighting his homosexuality, and they had the girl, and so you know, she's the heterosexual side, and then Freddy the gay side. And I know that they come up with this whole jargon about the movie. But
it was on purpose, though.
Well, it didn't run through my head at the time. All I remember is like he goes to see his gym teacher at the leather bar, and then they're going to the shower, and then it's like because his gym teacher's going to have sex with him, and it's like, and then he gets, of course, you know, and then he gets tied up by the towels and gets whipped by the wet towel.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
This is, and I thought to myself, this is really gay. So, but I mean,
I thought it was odd when I was a teenager, but you know, back then we didn't have social media and everything. We really weren't exposed to it. And if you thought you were gay or you had tendencies, not a lot of people talked about it, even though it didn't bother a lot of us back then. We were just that generation of weirdness, you know?
Well, I mean, another thing is it's quite odd that it came out when it did, because it was in the middle of the AIDS crisis as well.
I know, of all times. Yeah. But they said I was watching Robert Englund said that, you know, they were experimenting with it. They were trying to go there without going there. So that was totally there, you know, but they weren't trying to, it wasn't like rammed down your throat, really. But I mean, they were, but at first the gay community said they were kind of concerned about it. Because they're afraid of it what's the word I want to use? How you stigmatize somebody.
Yeah, stigmatize.
But then they actually come out and loved it, because a lot of people are like, wow, representation in a horror movie. And so they all thought it was really cool once they found out that they were the final guy, you know, kind of thing. So it was it was just a cool retrospective of that in Search of Darkness Part 2. I liked it a lot. It was really...
There's also a movie, a documentary about Mark Patton, who's the star of that, called Confessions of a Scream Queen.
Yes, I saw that.
Because he's the first Scream Queen. And he said, but the funny thing about, it's interesting because, you know, he does sit there and say that movie stigmatized him because it made him do nothing but gay roles. But,
yeah.
You know, let's be honest. Well, I don't know if it did, because the first film that I ever saw him in, he played a gay guy in a film of Robert Altman's called The Comeback to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean, with Sandy Dennis, Karen Black, Cher, Kathy Bates, you know, and he played a gay guy there. And I saw another movie that was before Freddie and before this one, where he played another gay guy. So it's kind of like, did this movie stigmatize you? No, this is probably the best known movie that you did, but... It's like everything I've ever seen him in, he always plays someone even before this Freddy thing. So it's kind of like, well, and to be honest, it's like, you know, the way he danced wasn't the most butch way to dance in a movie. I'll just leave it there.
Well, I mean, that was the age of the video coming out, and you had Debbie Gibson and all that stuff was coming out, and you know, people were dancing. I mean, MTV, you know.
But he was dancing with a a hairbrush pointed against his ass and grinding against it. So yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you would notice that. You could get away with I would get killed if I said that.
Well, the funny thing about it is that when he's been interviewed about the dance segment, they told him that he could do whatever he wanted, and this is what he comes up with. So, you know,
accounting for taste. Go figure.
But I mean, he's an icon figure now, so go figure. So I mean,
well, he did have that documentary out, and he like a lot of people. He's got a huge cult following still. Precisely. I mean, a lot of people still love him. He does go and try to make the circuit at the Comic Cons and, you know, the horror cons. And
stuff. Well, all those. I mean, all those Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, so on and so forth. All those great big legacy films. I mean, all those actors in there are, they have huge cult followings. You know, Adrienne King, Betsy Palmer, to the day she died, she had a big cult following. I mean, you know, we interviewed Dinah Manoff, which will also be out later on this weekend, that interview as well. And, you know, what did she tell us? She told us that, you know, out of everything she's done through all the history, long after she's dead, she'll be known as the first victim of Chucky.
I know, go figure. Because people didn't think that stuff was going to sell. I mean, it's just huge still. Huge. I mean, you know, people are wanting to get these real epic, sentimental, whatever roles, and they end up getting thrown out the window by an animated demonic doll, and they have found fame no matter what. So it is what it is.
Precisely.
It was the best it was the best decade for movies or horror.
Oh, precisely. It was a lot of different stuff, and they were trying anything. They would try anything and film it, and
you can't get away with any of that anymore. That's why I'm so afraid. I hope the wokeness doesn't take our movies away from us. I really, really hope not. So,
No, I find that television is the new cinema, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't watch television much. I watch a lot of stuff. I watch maybe two channels and that's it.
I watch mainly Netflix and Amazon Prime and Disney Plus. And I was going to say that the best stuff that I'm watching are TV shows made for Netflix series.
So, yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. But okay. I guess we're going to cut into the synopsis, and we have our very own soap announcer, and Keith is going to do the synopsis of episodes 17 to 25.
And this is what's been happening on this episode of Soap. Jessica goes to bail, causing Ingrid to gloat. Bert is behaving obsessively about Peter's murder, causing the Campbells much worry. The Campbells are informed by Ingrid about Jessica's arrest. Danny is let off the hook by Mr. Lofowitz on the condition that Mary agrees to do him an undisclosed favor. Eunice is disturbed to learn someone is blackmailing Congressman McCollum about his affair with her. Benson poses as Jessica's lawyer to bring her breakfast. Chester hires a lawyer to defend Jessica. Jessica admits that the gun that killed Peter does belong to her, and the lawyer refuses to take the case. Father Tim tells Corin that he is going on a religious retreat so he can forget about her. Bert is confronted by Mary about his emotional problems. Bert tells Mary that he can make himself invisible. Chester hires E. Ronald Malou to represent Jessica. Jessica tries to leave the country while out on bail, but Benson talks her out of it. Mary convinces her that she is loved and needed. Chester fires Claire, so Claire turns him in to the SEC. The Tates and the Campbells are interviewed by E. Ronald Malou, who is looking in vain for acceptable character witnesses. Mary is advised by a psychiatrist to have Bert hospitalized for observation. Corinne is visited by Jessica, who makes a heartfully plea for her to return home, but Ingrid seeks to poison her mind against Jessica. Eunice is shocked as Congressman McCollum receives compromising pictures from the blackmailer. She climbs out on the ledge to avoid being caught by Marilyn, who is in a difficult position as a courier comes to pick up McCollum's speech and walks off with the pictures instead. Eunice climbs off the ledge and into a stranger's hotel room. Congressman McCollum promises her a new life, but backs out when the courier returns the pictures. Jody confronts Chuck about the nasty notes he's been getting from Bob. Danny tries to break off with Elaine. Mr. Lofowitz tells him that he has to marry Elaine, but learns that Mary intends to have him committed. Jessica begins her pre-trial hearings in the murder case and is shocked to learn the prosecutor in Peter's murder case turns out to be the twin brother of the lawyer who have refused to defend Jessica. It is also revealed that the judge once lost $40,000 because of bad advice he got from Chester. Danny brings Elaine home to meet the dysfunctional Campbell family in an attempt to get her uninterested in him. Corin breaks into Father Tim's retreat cabin. Jessica locks herself in the bathroom to avoid going to trial. Jody meets Carol David, E. Ronald Malou's assistant, and is immediately propositioned by her. Jessica is nervous as her trial begins. Jody is convinced by Carol to go away for the weekend despite his insistence that they can only be friends. Bert checks into a mental hospital. Danny explains to Mary why he has to marry Elaine. Billy runs away from home because he's failed math and doesn't want to add to the family's problems. Jessica goes through with her defense at the trial. Benson, Chester, and Jessica herself testify. The prosecutor boasts that his surprise witness will make the jury want to lynch her. Eunice is dumped by Congressman McCollum after Marilyn threatens to ruin his political career. Bert confesses to Mary that he killed her first husband. Ingrid has a sexual encounter with the judge in Jessica's trial. Corinne walks out after learning of Ingrid's vendetta against the Tates. Father Tim tells his mother that he may leave the priesthood because of Corinne, but she doesn't take it very well. Jessica is asked by Malou if she knows who the surprise witness might be. The surprise witness turns out to be Mrs. Fain, who testified that she heard Jessica threaten to kill Peter. Jody finds himself in bed with Carol. Mary can't decide how she feels about Bert when he comes home from the hospital. Jody tells Carol that he won't have sex with her again. Jessica is the only person in the Tate household who gets any sleep after Mrs. Fain's testimony in court. Corinne realizes that Jessica is her true mother. Ingrid comes to reconcile with her, but she refuses to go with Ingrid. Chester is arrested by Chief Tinkler for stock fraud, and Jessica has her murder case go to trial. And that is what's been happening on Soap.
And welcome back to where we discuss the good, the bad, and the downright comedy and drama of Soap. So, Keith, episode 17, starting out, Jessica's going to jail, causing Ingrid to gloat. So what'd you think about these first few episodes, or all of them?
Well, I actually like these episodes. The comedy is just, what I like about Soap is an ensemble cast, and it's a large cast as well. And everyone gets their moment to shine.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing about, that everyone has their one-liners, and the thing is that they're giving one-liners and doing the comedy, but yet they're doing physical comedy at the same time.
Yeah.
But the funny thing about it is that they never poke fun at anyone. It's always done with love. I mean, even when, Bert is pretending he's invisible and he thinks he's invisible. And the thing
Bert
is,
does
it's
the
like,
thing where he's snapping his fingers and he thinks that he's gone and everybody's like looking at him like, what the fuck?
And it's fantastic. Because the thing is, they're like, well, we need to get him help. You know what I mean? We love him.
Seriously.
And, they just put up with it, sort of thing. And then you get Mary and how she reacts to it. And it's just so fantastic. But I mean, getting back to Jessica, I mean, she's so naive, but so funny. I mean,
she does that. I don't think anybody else could have commanded her character as well as she did throughout all these seasons, because she's really brilliant at being dumb. I mean, there's just nobody else can capture it like she does quite.
I mean, especially when she gets into the prison cell and she looks around and she goes, now I know why people want to break out of here. This is disgusting.
Benson dresses up as her lawyer to bring her breakfast in the briefcase. And then Chester hires that lawyer. He played Johnny Fever in WKRP. His name is eclipsing me right now. But there was two of them. He supposedly had a brother in this. One was a prosecutor. One was a defense attorney or something like that.
And they're twin brothers.
So, she didn't understand why. But
we also get Gordon jumped in this episode. Yeah. These episodes as well. He was also in WKRP as well. He was the station manager.
That's right.
The owner. It's quite interesting to see these two characters who would later go on into another iconic TV series.
One was brilliant as well. I mean, what was it? The turkey drop. The turkey drop. They're live turkeys. Oh, the humanity of it all. You got Les Nessman watching all these turkeys falling to their death from a helicopter.
Yeah, because they didn't realize.
Jeff goes, I had no idea they were live turkeys.
Well, the whole thing was like they thought that they would drop these turkeys out of the plane because they thought that turkeys could fly. It's like turkeys can't fly. So, splattering down in like fire cages.
It was raining turkeys. All over Cincinnati in the parking lot.
That was brilliant.
Then you got Eunice is she's disturbed to find out that the congressman that she's having an affair with is getting blackmailed with all those pictures.
Yeah, and the thing is that she wasn't that concerned. She's more concerned about the angle and whether they're good photos of her or not.
I know. She's do I really look like that? And I think didn't they say they were doing some kind of role play or something? I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, he was a gladiator. And wasn't she like some
slave,
kind of
sex that's slave? Right. Yeah. A slave girl. And somebody's taking pictures of it.
And she goes, I like the line where she sits there and says that, couldn't they get like such and such photographer? Because he always captures me in a really good light.
I know. It was funny how when we talked to Jennifer Salt about her performance and how she thought it was, she kind of had to soldier her way through it sometimes, but she seems so good at it. That's why I found it so hard to believe that, that she didn't feel, was she comfortable in front of the camera or?
I think she was, but I think that previously to Soap, she was a dramatic actress. And I think Dinah Manoff kind of mentioned it as well that you're kind of thrown into this high comedy series, and were these comedy greats. I mean, everyone in this is a comedy great,
right?
And holding your own. But I do think that Jennifer Salt does hold her own, because I think
she does. You
kind of need that straight woman kind of role in the mix of this craziness sort of thing.
Well, she seems to be the only character that, well, she has common sense, but she doesn't display it for herself, but she has it for everybody else, if it makes any sense.
Yeah.
And then
you got Father Ted and Corinne as well.
Yeah, I know. And he needs to go on a religious retreat because he's trying to get away from Corinne. But they don't really ever show how they kind of hooked up, did they? I just can't recall.
They went to school together. That's how they know each other.
Okay, because I just could not.
Because that
I
was
went
like
back an... to watch, and I still couldn't find it.
Yeah, they went to school together, and she had a crush on him or something, or it was one of those high school romances that never really took off sort of thing. And then she came back in. But I mean, it's quite bizarre because, I mean, I guess Corinne was, when she was with Peter, she was actually chasing after Father Tim at the same time. So it's kind of bizarre. And then when Peter gets killed and she's kind of upset, and then she's running to Father. It's kind of a bizarre situation if you think about it. It's like, you know,
because well, soap operas are bizarre, you know.
Well, she gets upset. She gets kind of upset that Peter's sleeping around on her, but in the same way, she's kind of trying to
chasing
the thing.
A priest.
But then again, Corinne was a bit of a slut, wasn't she?
Yeah, well, you always had like General Hospital or you had Search for Tomorrow, but they always seemed to center around the hospital. And you always had a hospital slot. That was just always, you know, that was just the way it was. You had your Dr. Noah Drakes, and then you had your, you know, Bobby's, Spencer's and all that stuff. And I'm probably going to get killed by a bunch of General Hospital people, but that's the truth. That's the way it was 30 years ago, you know, when Luke and Laura were doing their thing. So, but then you had Bert has emotional problems. And he thinks he can make himself invisible. And, you know, everybody's trying to figure out what to do with Bert because he's always like hiding in the corner. But you can see him, but it just seems like everybody's kind of trying to ignore it. Or is that my.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that if you got someone that you love and they're pretending that they're invisible and you kind of, you know, you just don't want to have to deal with it all the time, do you? So I just want to go off and pretend.
Can you imagine? But then, especially in episode 18, you have a really, you know, humanitarian side to this episode because Jessica wants to leave the country and skip bail because she feels that she's like weighing her family down or she's not, you know, important enough. And they have Benson and Mary try to convince her that, you know, that she's loved and she's needed. And I think it's over that roast she killed. Didn't he have a roast in the oven and it's like a piece of charcoal and he's upset over the roast?
Yeah.
I don't know. He forgot about it because he had to go. I think he had to go retrieve her, go find her because she was trying to skip bail.
Yeah, wasn't she going to like, the Caribbean or something? I can't remember exactly where she
was. Yeah, she was going to go away. I cannot recall where, but she was going to go somewhere warm, I believe.
But she told everybody and left notes for everyone.
I know, so they would have found her anyway. She's so good at that. I mean, she's just brilliant at that part. I cannot imagine anybody else in that part ever, just never. And on top of that, Chester finally is going to fire Claire, who's been blackmailing him, and she turns him in. Well, they're calling it the SEC in this sitcom, but I guess it's the same thing as Internal Revenue, I want to assume.
Yeah, I guess it's the same thing as Martha Stewart.
Yeah. Isn't this the same episode where she's trying to make a scene in the restaurant and she like takes the tablecloth and throws all the food on the floor and she starts screaming and he's just trying to eat his soup and drink his whatever little thing. He's got that dainty little glass. Chester's just drinking. He don't give a shit at this point. He just selling all of his stuff so he can keep Jessica out of prison.
Yeah, I was just kind of like, oh, stop it. You're making a scene. I'll tell you what's making a scene. And off she goes.
She starts screaming and carrying on. You don't really see her again much after that for a while.
No, but I liked how everyone else in the restaurant is just carrying on. Like not even noticing her either.
Well, they kind of looked. But I mean, if somebody started screaming in your face in a restaurant, I think that people would probably take more notice than what they did. Either that or they're just, you know, desensitized to people having scenes in that particular restaurant. But I know that I would notice. Well, I have seen scenes in restaurants and it's just like, whoa.
Well, I also have to think that maybe it's the town they live in because so far you have both families are a bit loopy. But then everyone else that lives in this town that we've been introduced to is a bit loopy as well. So this seems like a really loopy community.
Well, you realize how loopy it really is when, what is it? E. Ronald Malou comes into the picture. Oh, yeah. He wants to represent Jessica and he cannot find one single solitary person to represent her as a character witness because they're all batshit. One's a suicide, suicidal gay man.
Yeah, you got suicide gay man. You got the brother-in-law who thinks he's invisible. You got the nephew who basically talks to a doll. Yeah,
the tax evading brother-in-law or husband, I should say. And then you got Corinne. Yeah. She's just Corinne. Yeah. And you got Eunice messing around with congressman.
And you got Danny
Benson. And they come out and say, "Well, you're black." Yeah.
And then, of course, you got Danny, who's like working with the mob. So it's
right,
like,
oh. He's working with the mob. But you know, the funny thing about it is, back then, when you're addressing these things, people always talk about this prejudice against, you know, the sexuality and the blackness and everything else. And it just, this made fun of everything equally, and nobody was offended. That's why I don't understand what's going on, because they did it so well. You know, in the writing.
Well, I think that, you know, if you want to break through borders, the best way to do it is through comedy.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, and that's what we had in the 70s is they broke through borders through comedy and made things a lot better. Right. I think you know, it's a bit like Twilight Zone. If you want to get a personal message through, what you do is you thread it through your episode. But I think nowadays where things are going wrong is that once you point your finger and, you know, and push whatever you're trying to push on to people and you make it so blatant that your mind just tends to shut off from it. And that's, right. You know, but here your mind does shut off because you're enjoying it. But yet you're learning at the same time. You're learning about all this different, you know,
right.
All these different backgrounds, these different ethnicities, these different sexualities, so on and so forth. But But the people that they're making fun of, the people who are doing the making fun of are the people, but you laugh with the people that being made fun of because they're the strong ones. And the ones that are doing the poking the fun of, like, oh, he's a fruit, they're the idiots.
I haven't heard that was the last time I ever heard anybody call anybody gay a fruit was this show. I didn't even remember that term until I started watching these episodes again. But I mean, he just handles it so well. It's just like, he's a fruit. It's just like, you know, but Bert always gets upset, or you know, they always get upset when the word fruit comes out, you know. Yeah. I can't remember. Is this the one where the doll's in the refrigerator, or was that prior to this?
It's in this block, so it does.
It's in this block, so, yeah. I don't know why that just jumped, because Bert, I mean, he's just the outstanding kind of, because he's going to be hospitalized for observation. I think, is this the one where they're in the bathtub together and she's trying to talk to him about that?
Yeah, and then he says you can't turn invisible because he's wet.
Yeah. Yeah, or wait, he's got the ring of power. He has to have the ring of power. She goes, "Do you have this ring of power?"
Not yet, but I'm looking for it.
Yeah. And then you got Eunice as the congressman. What he got? He got the compromising pictures back. Wait, he was supposed to give them. He got them back from the blackmailer. She climbed out on a ledge because his wife came in.
Yeah. And then someone came in to look for the speech, and he actually gave the blackmail photographs to the guy taking
the carrier
speech
to the courier. To the courier. Yeah, to the courier. And it seems like this guy doesn't really have any, I don't know, the typical philandering, you know, congressman. She's out on the balcony the ledge. And it doesn't even seem like there's a lot of, you know, oh my God, she's out on the ledge. It's raining, you know, so she has to come through the window. that guy was in that particular room.
And, you know, the thing is like, you know, and then, you know, and then he brings it, you know, it's storming outside as well. Storming, thunder, lightning, everything like that. The wife leaves, she comes back inside. And then it's like, you know, it is, you know, and they're like looking for her. They realize it's the blackmail pictures. And then he goes, "Oh, we'll go away to Acapulco. It'll just be the two of us."
And it'll be just us.
And then the pictures come back. "Oh, never mind that. You know, I'm going to be a senator. What are you talking about? Get out of here," sort of thing. And I think, you know, it kind of, it's kind of interesting because the thing is, it's like, it's all about him, isn't it? It's not about her at all.
And no, we get a lot of that. She's just the side girl, basically, because you know, he's never going to leave the wife. They never usually leave the wife because it's such a thing of convenience. And they, and especially if you're in politics, you don't want to screw with that stuff, you know, but that was back in the day. I don't know. Now they got social media, so everybody gets busted, no matter what, somebody does. And then in the same block, you got Jody confronts Chuck and Bob about the nasty notes he's getting from Bob. I'm trying to remember some of them. Do you remember some of them?
My mind's a bit of a muddle, but I just remember, like, Jody's trying to, like, go, Chuck, you have a problem here. We need to look at this.
He's trying to reach Bob.
And then he gets to the point where he's like turning fruit. And he's like turns the
Oh, that's when he hit Bob. That's when Bob goes in the refrigerator.
Yeah, Bob's in the refrigerator.
Bob's in the refrigerator. But
Chuck goes, I don't have a problem. Meanwhile, it's like Chuck's like talking through using fruit as Bob.
Grapefruit. Yeah, he's got the mouth of the grapefruit going.
And then he juices the grapefruit and then he's got Bob screaming. God, I have to sit there and say some of my favorite characters are Chuck and Bob. Stuff that comes out of Bob's mouth is just so. I mean, I know.
But as a viewer, you start, it's kind of funny because you see the family. They start to address this doll, and like it's like to actually exists. And as a viewer, you start seeing it as an actor. In the sitcom, because he's so prominent and it's like he's always there and he's such a wise ass, and they don't really go into exactly why Bob is there or what's going on with Chuck, where he has, you know, Bob being.
I think that if you're living with someone who basically talked through a doll the whole time and the doll's a separate personality, you probably would start addressing that doll. Like, you probably would. You know, I probably would. You find yourself talking to him, and afterwards you're like, why am I talking to this freaking doll? You know what I mean?
Which everybody finds himself doing, you know, they're trying to address him, you know, especially if it's Bob, you know. And then Bert opens a refrigerator. You know, he does that shaking thing with his head, and he gets all, you know, emotional when he sees him sees him stuck in the refrigerator.
And then Chuck carries Bob off, and the last thing Bob says, because, you know, the light still stays on in the fridge when the door's closed.
That light stays on. And then you got Jessica's pretrial stuff is going on. And the prosecutor is, that's when she finds out the prosecutor happens to be the twin brother of the lawyer who didn't want to defend Jessica because he thought it was just not even worth trying because all the evidence was overwhelming. And Jessica being Jessica, just like, no, it's not going to happen. And on top of that, Chester, well, I don't know if he embezzled 40 grand from the judge, but he wasted his 40 grand on a bad investment. So they got that against them already.
And this scene is quite brilliant because you got Jessica coming in and meeting Judge. She goes, oh, what's underneath the robe?
And he's like, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
And then he flashes her. He flashes her.
And then annoying.
And then the whole time is like, he's talking, is like, and Chester's going, oh, I'm so sorry about, you know, I lost money too. And he goes, oh, don't worry. Like, my father was going to die sometime. Yeah, my wife could have used that new kidney, but it's fine. Don't worry. Everything's fine. I'm over it.
I know. They're so nonchalant about things like that.
Well, we also find out that Elaine and Danny, Elaine's the daughter of the
Lefkowitz
boss. Yeah, I mean, Chris, she's a bit of a nympho, and poor Danny's being worn out.
Yeah, Danny's like, doesn't know what to do. He just wants to go home and sleep. And she says, be back at a certain time, or no, you're not leaving, or I'm not done with you yet. Danny's like exhausted.
But then we actually, you know, we do find out that for Danny to get in good with the mob, what his payback is, he has to marry Elaine.
Yeah. And he brings her home because his family's so dysfunctional that he thinks if he brings her home to this dysfunctional family, that, you know, the Campbells will scare her off. and that she won't be interested in him anymore, but she just makes fun of them. You know, she's calling Jody a fruit. She's calling, you know, Chuck and Bob crazy, you know, and then you got Bert, who's the invisible man. So you that would scare me off from, honestly.
Yeah, but Elaine thinks, oh, this is all made up. You guys are all in on it. She doesn't believe anything.
Yeah, she
real.
Thinks that he's, yeah. It's just like, there's just no hope because she thinks he did it on purpose to freak her out, but the family's actually like that. And then you got Corinne climbing. I don't know if she says she went to another country to find Father Tim. So I'm assuming this is Mount Everest or whatever in Nepal. It's a mountain that she's climbing up to get to Father Tim in her little white, whatever that is. And then she said she has some kind of Sherpa or something, get her up the mountain. And he hasn't seen a woman in a long time.
Well, one priest thinks that she's a vision.
Yeah, that's right. They think she's an angel or something.
Yeah.
And then she's going to go stay in the hotel at the bottom of the mountain. And Father Tim's going to stay in the real cold. That looked like a stone cabin. It didn't look like a cabin to me, but I guess it could have been.
Yeah. I mean, the Tim and Corinne thing is quite interesting.
The father, you know, went
away. Not to give anything away, but it does have its payoff later on. So.
Yeah. I don't know why. I guess they're poking fun at the, you know, ministry or Catholic tradition or whatever, because, you know, everybody, as a girl, you know, being in Catholic school, I remember the usual father, what a waste kind of guys that were just too good looking to be priests. It's like, wow. And you don't get it when you're, it's like, wow, why? Just why? Yeah. I guess you had to be there, you know? I can honestly see where this has happened, you know? I mean, I'm sure.
Well, we had a miniseries in the 80s about it called The Thornbirds.
Oh, so. Yeah, that's right. That's right. I love that series, too. That's one of the, I hate how it ends because it's just sad, but new beginnings, but it's still sad how it ends because you feel so bad for Richard Chamberlain because, I mean, it took him all the way to the end and she's so mean about it. You know, she tells him that was his son that drowned, you know? And I mean, she's just so cold when she does that to him. Richard Chamberlain's like ready to like keel over. And I think he dies not too long after that of a broken heart or a bad ticker or whatever happens, but
yeah, I don't think I've ever remember. I don't think I've ever watched it. I remember my grandmother.
Oh, I love it. I love the records.
I was more into Lace. Which one of you bitches is my mother?
Those were those sitcoms, but those were those movie of the week things that were series.
Mini series.
Yeah. Then I had the only color TV in college, and everybody would come in my room because I had the color TV, and we'd watch like North and South, and the Thornbirds,
Scruples.
Balls and Lace and what was it? Master of the Game. What was the other one?
Rich Man, Poor Man.
Rich Man, Poor Man.
But what they were always like based on like these best selling novels. And then
yeah, Jackie Collins or Sydney
Hollywood
Sheldon.
Lives.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they were The Other Side of Midnight. But yeah,
I love Master of the Game with Diane Cannon. She did such a good job in that. I wish they put those on again. I really love those eight, and they were so 80s, you know, so 80s.
Well, I think they even did a mini series of Valley of the Dolls, didn't they? Were like,
yeah, they did.
And people like that. So
they certainly did.
But yeah, that's back when mini series were big. Well, I mean, soap's a bit of a mini series, really.
Yeah, kind of. And then you got Jody. And he meets Carol, and Carol is the paralegal to Mr. Malou or the lawyer Malou or whatever.
Yeah.
Jessica's defender. And she's got the hots for Jody, and she just sees this as a big challenge because he's gay and she thinks that she can fix him kind of thing.
Well, I mean, the worst thing about it, they go away for the weekend and she tells him it's going to be a two-bedroom place. It's one bedroom, so they have to share a bed. So he's trying to sleep. Meanwhile, she's like trying to attack him in his sleep to the point where it's just like, if I think, doesn't he just give up and say, okay, fine, I'll sleep with you. Just
no, she just starts crying and makes him feel guilty. And so he hugs her and then one thing leads to another. And then Jody just, you know, he goes, once in a while, what did he say? He says, once in a while, I'd like something else, but it doesn't mean I'm going to stop liking waffles or something like that.
Yeah.
I might try this, but I'm still going to like waffles.
It's a bit like, you know, I went to a bar mitzvah once. Doesn't make me Jewish.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a bit like that, isn't it? So,
yeah. And Bert's in the mental hospital finally. But I thought it was kind of funny. His psychiatrist, you know, just to make sure he goes in there and goes, Mr. Campbell, you know, to make sure that he wasn't invisible and wasn't in his office before he checks him in.
I mean, and I think this is quite lovingly done, actually, sort of thing, because we actually do get to, you know, Bert does it because he loves Barry and he's feeling okay, I need to get fixed, and which is nice, you know. So, and it's good to have that kind of thing. That's what's quite nice about, you know, Bert's crazy as hell, but Mary loves him.
Danny explains to his mother, to Mary, why he has to marry Elaine finally, because she's such a crass human being. You know, what I think was that this was the, I know this is the block where he brings her home and she's just rude, crude, and socially unacceptable to the whole family.
Well, she's just a spoiled little brat, isn't she?
Yeah, she is. She is. And then you got Billy, who ran away from home because he fails his math. And because everything is already in turmoil and utter chaos, he doesn't want to add any more burden to the family problems, which is kind of, you know, they do sneak the humane stuff in there, you know, where that makes both families look, they're real people. So you got the comedy on one side, but you also have the humanity on the other side, where it shows these, you know, how they're all warm, loving individuals, irregardless of how much dysfunction they have. Personally, or in as a group, you know, at this point.
Well, we do get Jessica basically starting court as well, where she decides it's best to push the tables together to make it more of a community.
Yeah, because everybody's at odds, and it just seems so, you know, no one's going to get along if they're not together. And you got the defense attorney over here, you got the prosecution. Yeah, it doesn't work.
I love Jessica during this court, the whole court sequences, though. It's so
brilliant.
She's
always flitting around like a butterfly to the jury and stuff, and they can't get her to sit down. They always have, you always see Malou having to grab her and make her sit down because she's just flitting everywhere. It's the only word you got for it.
It's like, is she always like that? Yeah, she's just Jessica.
Just Jessica, yeah.
She's so brilliant. I mean, it looks like then we get Eunice, who's dumped by Congressman McCallum. And this is quite interesting because Marilyn, his wife, knows everything. Knows every single hotel they've been to and everything. And you know, she stays with him because it's power, isn't it? She doesn't care what he does, because at the end of the day, she's going to the Senate with him.
Right. And the thing is that she knows that her husband is going to not divorce her and leave with Eunice. And I think that Eunice really wasn't quite seeing this happening or actually come, because, you know, he's sweet talking her all the time in her situation, which is kind of cold. But it's politicians we're talking about here. So is what it is.
Well, I have to sit there and say we do get Ingrid sleeping with the judge.
I know. I didn't see that one coming. I totally forgot about that, because I haven't seen a lot of these in how many decades now. So you forget about that. But the one thing about Ingrid is the way she does that accent, and it's always ha. She's always got that ha at the end of every sentence.
And she always has to have the last word as well.
She's a nasty human being. She's just an awful person. And she's still awful, but they soften her up in Benson when they had that spinoff. But, you know, they're still kind of at odds in that one, her and Benson. And then Bert finally has to confess that he killed Mary's husband. And that gets kind of all wound up.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, Danny knew, though, didn't he? So Danny knew.
Yeah.
I'm
not sure, and he forgave Bert.
But did Jody know?
I don't think Jody knew. I think it was just only between Danny and Bert. There was really no reason to tell anybody else.
And this is where we actually get, Corinne basically walking out on Ingrid and going back to the Tate family. And then you get that really lovely scene between Corinne and Jessica, which I thought was a really lovely scene. about that it doesn't matter who gives birth to you, it's who loves you and who's there for you. And,
yeah, well, there's a lot of truth to that too, because I know people that, you know, have children and the step parents or the, you know, the other part of the Insta family seems to have a whole lot more to do with them or take care of them and love them and nurture them far more than the biological side. So that was great actually, because it's true. You know, she took care of her and made her wings for her costumes and, you know, was there for all of her heartbreaks and her braces. And, you know, she did everything that a normal mother would do, but she just wasn't the biological mom. So that was a really, that one scene, it was really sweet. But I think that at that point though, that Ingrid said, no, don't listen to her because she's trying to get you to testify for her, you know, but and then Corinne has a change of heart, but she eventually comes to her senses and goes home.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, she sees Ingrid for what she is, basically.
Yeah, she could tell she's always like cringing. There's always cringe going on, you know, when you know, she's trying to, you know, like hug on her or love on her. And you always wonder, it's like, why does she really want Corinne, or is it she just really want to get back at the Tates?
Yeah, because, I mean, but then again, I mean, she's kind of married into the Tate family anyway, because, I mean, she is Mary and Jessica's daughter, sister-in-law, really, because she's married to the brother, isn't she?
Dr. Bombay.
Yeah.
That's all I think of when I see that guy. It's Dr. Bombay, nobody else.
Dr. Bombay.
Wait, he played in that. What was that movie? Oh, The Mummy. He was the pilot in The Mummy. He was pretty good in that, too.
Mm.
I didn't see the sexual encounter coming with Ingrid and that judge. And I can't remember the name of that judge, but he always played those grumpy kind of, you know, judicial parts back in the day.
Well, this was quite nice because he always played, you know, he always had those kind of roles, no matter, I mean, he was like in old movies and Bewitched, he pops up in Bewitched and various other things, especially through our childhood, he pop up. But I think this is the first time we actually get to see a slight sense of humor with him as well, though, like a twitch in the eye. And that was quite nice seeing that. So, but yeah, that was quite good. So
then you have the surprise witness, and that was Mrs. Fine?
That's who I thought
killed Peter, actually, in the beginning.
Well, the funny thing about it is it's like, she goes, why are you here? And she goes, I'm here because you broke in while I was having dinner with my husband, telling him I was having an affair with Peter and that I had to testify.
Oh, that's right.
And then he goes, what's your address? She gives her address and she goes, and call first before you come. So yeah, so that was quite funny. It's like the reason why she's there is because she's kind of been blackmailed to go there anyway. I mean, she goes, my husband left me. He left with like his teenage girlfriend.
Yeah,
making divorce from me. Her husband's having an affair as well. So
she was having an affair though, but nobody knew about it. They kind of like blew her cover and destroyed her life, kind of.
But at the same time, her husband's having an affair as well because he's run off with his teenage bride.
That's right. Yeah. So there's nobody being honest in any of this part of this episode, but that's what's really funny about it, because what are soap operas? It's total immoral, you know, intrigue is all it is. This one's having an affair with this one. You got a baby switch over here. I mean, I'm watching General Hospital. I don't know how many baby switches I got to deal with anymore. All of them baby switches, like stop with the baby storylines.
Yeah. And of course, Jody finds himself in bed with Carol again.
Well, we knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
But that kind of, you know, not now, but I mean, things kind of work out.
Yeah, but he does tell Carol that he won't be sleeping with her ever again. But
it was the next episode that the big hunky quarterback comes back.
The quarterback comes back.
Yeah. Mary's trying to figure out how she feels about Bert because he already finally tells her after what the whole season that he killed her husband, even though he was in the mob, and Danny even takes up for him because, well, if I forgave him, maybe you can forgive him.
Mm. Yeah. And that was quite touching because, you know, you know, and then you got that little heart to heart between the two of them. And
yeah,
she says, you know, we'll work through this. We, you know, we have love for each other. We'll work through this.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. The family can overcome it. This is when Corinne realizes that Jessica's her real mother, actuality, not, you know, and she wants to reconcile with her mom and support her. And, you know, and then Ingrid, that's when Ingrid starts doing her ha and all of her curses and everything else through the door. I couldn't even try in a month plus Sundays to do what she does. But I mean, she's another one. She's just hysterical. I mean, she just is. I guess she's Swedish, right? Is that what it's supposed to be?
Yeah, she's supposed to be Swedish, yeah.
But everybody gets it wrong. It's Finnish or German or something like that. She's getting all bent out of shape about it. And then Chester's finally arrested by Chief Tinkler. I don't even know where they come up with these names because of all that stock fraud.
Yeah. And then Jessica's case goes to the jury where we have to sit there and wait for what the jury's going to come back with.
Yeah, but nobody can sleep that night. Everybody's getting up. And then she's trying to make those waffles and Benson's like, what the hell are you doing? And she's ignoring, you know, what she's doing. She's dumping all this salt into the waffle mix and you know, it's going to be bad. She actually cooks them. And then Danny's still getting all worked up because he's going to, Lefkowitz is going to kill his whole family if he runs away and doesn't want to marry Elaine.
Yeah.
I mean, cute it's these episodes though. I mean, she really was cute as a button. I don't know why I didn't say, I think I probably told her when we were interviewing her, Dinah Manoff, because she just got that look about her. She's very endearing, you know, even now she's just got, even though she's playing this certain part, there's something endearing about her, even though she's annoying and she's spoiled and, you know, you just got to love her.
Yeah. I mean, we also get that Mary does forgive Bert and tells her that she was glad that it was that Bert lived and her first husband died. She thought it went that way instead of the other way around, which is quite nice.
And then we got Tim coming around, Father Tim. He's going to leave the priesthood. But I kind of thought there was some hesitating because he says he wants to get married first before they, you know, consummate their relationship. And I don't think Corinne's all over that. And she seemed kind of hesitant on the marriage part. Like, why we got to wait, you know?
But we also meet Tim's mom. And then we realize that.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Played by the fantastic Doris Roberts. She was always great anyway. But we find out that basically that the reason why he's the priest, because it was her dream. It's not his dream. It was her dream.
You know what that all reminded me of? Remember Saturday Night Fever? Where he, you know,
yeah, the father.
Brother
yeah,
was the brother. Father. Then the mother just thought that she got all of her jewels and her crown in heaven because her son was a priest and he does not want to be a priest. And I think that probably really happens, especially, I hate to say this, I hope my mother's not listening, in the Italian families, maybe even in the Irish families, because, you know, the Roman Catholic Church or whatever is so important. At least back then it was, you know, it was a big deal probably to have a priest in the family, you know? Mm-hmm. I do know people that were pretty proud of it. They stuck with it though.
I mean, this final episode, it is a bunch of cliffhangers, isn't it?
So it is. This is the end of the season.
Yeah.
Got Jody's convinced that Carol wants them to live together as friends, you know, friends with benefits, maybe, or just friends.
Just friends, roommates.
She's quite obvious to the viewer of what she's really doing. And Jody just seems really naive, kind of, sort of, because maybe feminine wiles isn't his forte.
Yeah, but then, of course, the quarterback, Dennis, comes back into the picture.
And things didn't work out with his wife because he had to get married because he left Jody because he wanted to look normal, I guess, because he's a big old hairy quarterback, you know, back then.
Jody was going to get a sex change because of him.
Suicide. Can you imagine?
And now it's like, now we're left with, does Jody and Carol move in together and become flatmates, or does Jody go back to Dennis? We don't know.
Yeah.
So we're left with that to ponder about that.
Yeah. So yeah.
And then and then Jessica's lawyer's in love with her.
Yeah. Who'd have thought? I didn't see that one coming either. I totally forgot about that.
No. And to hide it, they decide to do the hustle and do some disco
dancing. Oh, that's right.
And then Chester joins
Jessica,
in.
I love you. And they were doing the Latin hustle when it came in. And then she's found guilty by the jury. And Peter is supposedly been murdered, not by Jessica, actually, but by either Chester, Jody, Corinne, Benson, or Bert. And I often wondered if Dallas, remember who shot JR in the 80s? Mm-hmm. Is this where they got that from? Because that was such a big deal. Can you remember like who shot? I always knew Kristen did it. But, you know, there's a lot of us.
Yeah, I mean, this is like before Dallas as well. Yeah. So, I mean, this is 70s. So, and the thing is that now we have to wait a whole summer before we find. But I mean, luckily for us, I mean, I think we're back. I think we got one more episode in this season, don't we? I think we're back in August. Aren't we?
So, yeah, I think we got one more.
Yeah, I think we're back in August. So we'll find out at that time. But, you know, so our viewers, if they're not keeping up, we'll have to wait until we find out when we discuss our next episode.
Yeah, we got a little ways to go. And it's always fun watching these, though. I mean, if you could get a chance to buy the box set or view it somewhere else, I can't, especially if you're our age and you can appreciate them more, because my brothers, I would sit there. I didn't watch it near as much as my brothers did, but my brothers would sit there and watch this and just laugh. They're a little older than me, of course, but just laugh. And they loved it. I mean, it was a big deal.
I mean, I'm watching it now, and I was going to say, outside of the picture quality, I wish the picture quality was a bit better on these, because it looks like it's all done with videotape.
I actually, the box set I got is pretty decent quality. I'm really quite surprised. And, you know, and it's fairly easy, you know, to pop it in my computer and watch it. I'm lucky I got one of the old dinosaur computer laptops that still have the CD thing in it. Mm. You know, time to get a new one though. I'm ready for a new one. But I mean, the first season of this, it's just setting up the groundwork and everything. And you can see where all the controversy comes from back then, because they did want to get rid of this series. They didn't even want it to, you know, you had the religious people and, you know, people were freaked out about the homosexuality and they thought it was lies and misinformation that the show was going to be saturated with sex. I mean, all in the first season, and religious groups used to go crazy and campaign to get it off the air. Mm. So I think in the end, ABC dropped the fee for sponsoring the show from $75,000 to a spot for just $40,000. But because of all the fuss it generated, you know how that fuss generates publicity. And if people know there's, you know, a big fuss about something, they're going to watch it. And so, you know, it kind of became, you know, TV land gold, basically. And, you know, we just, you know, you have your first season of it, and it's a great show. I can't.
And to be honest, it was a big, you know, it was a big, what's the word when people loved it. It was you know, it did very, very well. And the ratings is a big ratings winner. So.
And it was kind of, I wouldn't say it was educational. I would say that, well, yeah, it was, but it was in a nice way, sort of like Blazing Saddles poked fun of everything. This is kind of like that in a lot of ways. It pokes fun at stuff, but in the same way it's informing, you know, these people are human. You know, everybody has some kind of dysfunction in their life, because nobody is a picture perfect human. It's just not possible. I don't care who you are. So and every family is different. Every family has all kinds of crap going on. Maybe not as much as the Campbells and the Tates, but I think we can all relate to some of it, you know? So I think that's what makes the first season, you know, pretty epic.
Yeah. And I really like these.
And now that we've come to brought to you by, what's your final thoughts on this block of episodes, Keith?
I think they're really good. I think it's strong. I think it has a really strong final episode to make you want to tune into season two and wait for season two. And, you know, and I think I've said it in previous episodes that we've done that we covered, is that I love the high comedy. I love the one-liners, and I love the heart and emotion. It's like you're laughing, you're crying, your heart, you know, your heart breaks for these people, and then you're laughing a minute later. And the show takes you on such highs and lows. It's amazing.
It does.
And it's probably one of the best fast witty shows. And you know, when you got a large cast of characters and be able to jumble all these characters together and be able, you know, and to be able to mix it all. I mean, it's actually quite a fantastic show. I mean,
I think the chemistry and the people and the writing are just fantastic.
Yeah,
and you're Susan not going to get stuff like this anymore. Susan Harris, brilliant writer.
And so, so ahead of her time. I mean, this thing is so ahead of its time at the time. And it's considered what one of the best comedy series ever to put on television. This is up to Mary Tyler Moore and All in the Family. And, you know, and it's,
well, anything that came from Susan Harris was pretty damn good. I mean, she just
Golden Girls,
Benson. Yeah. You know, and even Dinah Manoff, she explains to us, you know, that Susan Harris just had it going on. You know, everybody said that, you know, Jennifer Salt, the writing was just fantastic. You just don't, I don't know if these people just don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Or if it was just that they came at the right time, you know, or is it the right time in history, you know, for these kind of things to come out? Because we're coming out of the 70s into the 80s and all this cultural stuff and differences. And, you know, you have AIDS going on, you have, you know, women's lib going on, you have politics going on, you know.
But I also think there's a, this show has something that other sitcoms don't have. And that's like, very fast, witty scripts. Very fast. I mean, it's very fast. The thing is, you know, they're giving you something even before you stop laughing. They're giving you something else. And next thing you know, it's like, you know, and you're laughing, and all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, I feel like I'm going to cry. This is so sad. And then laughing again. It's like, and it's so fast. It's like you're watching like a 20-minute episode that goes by in like 5 minutes. It's like before you know it, onto the next episode. And, you know, even if you know, whether you watch Friends or any other shows, and even All in the Family, Mary Tyler Moore, I mean, nothing moved this fast. I think this is the fastest moving show I've ever seen.
I would have never thought of that, actually, until you mentioned it, but it is. It just clips right along. And you think that you've been there for a while, which is so brilliant about it, because they put this whole story together in 23 minutes, 24 minutes with commercials after.
And multiple stories going at the same time.
Storylines.
And so fast. And it's just like, you know, I mean, it's hard to believe that, you know, we've gone through the whole murder investigation and everything right up through the jury.
And the trial. And the verdict, you know.
And the verdict and everything like that. And all, you know, all the stories in between, you know, it just moves so fast. It's like, for a show at this time, okay, you do get the recap at the beginning, and then you kind of get the closing at the end of each episode. But God forbid, I mean, if you just lost one episode, you could lose a lot.
I know, you almost have to. You know, I noticed when I was watching all these, I had missed episode 19 for some reason. You know, when you go in and you're watching your CD and you have to click 17, 18, 19, do that. I go, there's something missing here, because I was lost there for a while. Then I go, oh, wow, how did I miss 19? So I had to go all the way back last night and watch 19. And then I just couldn't, you know, kind of cruise through them as a review. And I was like, what? You're right. Because if you miss one, it's kind of like Dark Shadows. You're going to miss a lot, because they pack a lot in 20 minutes for back in the day for these stories, and you will miss something. And it's like, well, they do have the, you know, wrap ups at the end and stuff, but you want to see it. You don't want to miss an episode, because you know it's going to be funny as hell.
Yeah, I mean, I have to sit there and say I sometimes wish Dark Shadows had this kind of pacing sometimes.
I know, sometimes I'm still in that one.
There have been, like, you know, when you got, you know, when we reviewed 25 episodes, it's like, God, I kind of wish it's like we could have actually got all this done in like two episodes. if this is put in soap, this whole storyline would have been gone by now.
Where was Susan Harris back in 1968?
Precisely. She should run for Dark Shadows.
Please. Yeah, let's get through that Adam storyline, man. This is the end of the Literary License Podcast retrospective of Soap Season 1, episodes 17 to 25. Tune in next time, where we'll be discussing our classic novel for the month of May, The Picture of Dorian Gray by Oscar Wilde, and the movie The Picture of Dorian Gray, filmed in 1945, directed by Albert Lewin. Is that how you say it? Lewin? So it's good night from myself, and good night from Keith. Say good night, Keith.
Good. Good night, y'all. See you next time.
Good night, y'all. And we will see you all next week for our classic book to screen, Dorian Gray, and the movie of Picture of Dorian Gray by Albert Lewis. So bye, y'all. Have a great week.
Family, family, family. I go to war with my family. Ups and downs, wrong or right, this family. They think that we crazy. They say that we crazy, can't handle it. My back on the wall, back. Who I'ma call my family? We different. We stick out. Stick out. Wig out. Wig out. Bug out. Pop out. Hop out. Ball out. Show out.
I just the party. Let's not make a problem. No. Why you looking at me like it's something sad? You should know it's not just me that you be rubbing.
Wrong way, so you better think twice. You shouldn't mess with me. You don't wanna mess with me. Cause if you mess with me, you're messing with my family. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You shouldn't mess with me.
You don't wanna mess with me. Cause if you mess with me, you're messing with my family.
Ay, 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 ay.
You might think that we are all loco.
Ay, ay, ay.
Don't mess with my family.
But this family about to go global.
We blown up.
Ay, just a party, let's not make a problem. No, why you looking at me like a something something? You should know it's not just me that you be rubbing.
Wrong way, so you better think twice. You shouldn't mess with me.
You don't wanna mess with me.
Cause if you mess with me, you're messing
don't mess with
my family. You shouldn't mess with me.
You don't wanna mess with me. Cause if you mess with me, you're messing with my family.
They say we got problems, but we say it's cool. Family, family, I go to war with my family. Ups and downs, wrong or right, this family.
Aye, 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 aye.
You might think that we are.